generally very hard to get the exact right temperature.
Well, we're currently in the in-between zone, aren't we? Which is October is an absolute.
Exactly. That's why it's a particularly difficult time of year to get that right, isn't it? How many layers? Fleece or not fleece? Wool?
Too early for your thermals, isn't it?
Too early for your thermals. You need to keep it waterproof. Mm,
for sure.
The ultimate outfit really would be you're naked inside a huge balloon.
Ooh. Yes.
That's the perfect October get up.
Keep talking.
Is it a semi-transparent balloon or fully transparent balloon or opaque balloon?
Semi-transparent so that people know you're in there. Kind of frosted glass style.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
So they know you're in there, but they can't see that you're naked. Nobody wants to see you.
Is it lubricated within or are you just going to squeak about?
I think you probably begin to lubricate it just with your own oils eventually.
Self-lubricating. Okay, that's clever.
Yeah.
So is your head sticking out the top? Because in which case you're going to get a nasty surprise when you try and roll yourself down the shops. Because your head's going to be smacking pavement.
Yes.
Every time.
Or are there a couple of sort of protuberances at the top that someone can hold onto and ride you like a space hopper?
That's a nice idea. But what's that person wearing? He's wearing his own. Is he wearing a balloon?
He's wearing your clothes.
It's about maintaining your own body heat level, isn't it? We're all at body temperature, aren't we? Ideally.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Right. Body temperature is surprisingly high, isn't it? This is, at me, you can say it's quite a thick thing. But what is it? 36.5 degrees centigrade?
37 degrees.
37, right. That's pretty hot, isn't it?
Thereabouts.
180, you're cooking a roast.
Yeah. Yeah.
So 40, you're what?
It's less than that.
You went on your way.
You're on your way, aren't you? You're slow cooking a lamb, potentially.
It's going to take a very long time at that temperature, though, isn't it?
Is it to slow cook a lamb?
I think so.
Mike, you can explain this. I've always wondered, right? So if human body temperature is 37,
yeah.
Should it not mean that 37 degrees centigrade, which is very, very hot,
yeah.
Should be our ultimate temperature?
Oh, I see. Are you suggesting that the ambient temperature should be the same as body temperature? So you can't really tell where the air ends and your body begins?
It's the most ideal ambient temperature.
Hmm.
But in reality, we know that's not true because 37 is horrific.
No, it's desperately uncomfortable.
Well, the thing is, it's how hot you are and how hot you feel, isn't there, presumably?
That's what Gokwan used to say, didn't he, on How to Look Good Naked. Do you remember that TV show?
Did he really do a show called How to Look Good Naked?
Yeah, do you remember that?
No.
Gokwan, fashion man, speaks to middle-aged woman who feels that she's no longer attractive. It's quite brutal.
Yeah.
But it also felt like it was a sort of beachhead television show to sort of for all kinds of other stuff, sort of nudie stuff in the UK, right?
I do think it was...
Like, I think he smashed through the...
He smashed through the penis doors.
He smashed through the glass penis, yeah.
He smashed through
the pants ceiling.
He smashed open those penis doors, which are like saloon doors. They came back and smashed him again briefly, knocked him over, but he got up again. Didn't they?
I think it was largely women as well. He was helping with their self-confidence rather than men. He would show them how to accentuate their bust and waist by wearing a belt around their midriff. That was how he used to do it.
So you'd be naked except for a belt and you'd go out into the world. I'm rocking my new look and I'm feeling confident. I'm going down the pub. I'm wearing just a belt.
What he would do is he'd give them a new outfit, which would then raise their confidence in themselves.
Right.
And then at the end, they would prove that they had renovated their own self-esteem by doing a naked photo shoot, which would then often be like projected onto like the side of the Houses of Parliament or like on Leicester Square in the big screen.
Or onto David Blaine.
Onto David Blaine. And then the woman's husband would be brought into Leicester Square and go, and Gok would go, look at that, that's your wife. And the guy would just look really scared and like kind of bewildered.
Yeah. And he'd be wondering about the sort of constitutional implications. Wouldn't he? I think that's the kind of thing where if you do it, on the day you're absolutely buzzing. You're like, this has been so freeing for me.
I am going to do it. Do you know what? I am going to do it. I don't want to do it.
I am going to do it.
I shouldn't do it and it's madness, but I'm going to ruddy do it.
And who'd have thought it? Little old me.
They never would have guessed.
My left nipple.
Completely obscuring Big Ben.
Completely obscuring Big Ben.
Thousands of tourists are complaining from across the world because they can't see Big Ben. They can just see my left nipple. It's amazing.
And I've never made a big fuss about anything. I've just led a simple life.
I'm a very private person, really. If anything, a bit of me feeling like I'm regretting this decision completely. It's a really bad idea, but...
And my right knocker's on a bus and it's moving around with the bus. My right knocker's going round.
How are they doing that?
I don't know how they've done that.
It's got an adductor. I've got an amphibious boob.
My arse is the cabinet war rooms now, somehow. It's an underground wartime bunker.
They're holding a cobra meeting in my anus.
They've decided to invade Paraguay. That's unprecedented. Is that my fault? Is that because of my anus?
I just want to make it clear that when they did do the photo shoot with Gok Wan and the participant, you couldn't see their nipples or anus. They were very tasteful.
Oh, really?
Well,
but
how were they naked then?
Well, they'd often obscure they'd hold their breasts and their arm like that.
Oh, okay.
They'd often be lying down.
Ben, that's lovely the way you did that little pose just then.
Thank you. Was. It feels like that's not your first calendar shoot.
That is not your first calendar shoot, Ben.
Ben. You were in the old, I think it was the Ronda Lads of 97, wasn't it? I seem to remember.
That's right. Lads O' the Valley.
Yeah.
He was July through September, mate. He was too good. They couldn't pause him. They had to go through the whole summer.
With just a Davy lamp obscuring the unmentionables.
My favourite one is the one where you've got one foot each on two hay bales.
And the camera's pointing directly up to the sky. From below.
Yeah. And there's just a little baby goat in a little basket.
Or what you think's a baby goat.
I think it's a baby goat.
It's actually my perineal horn, which we've spoken about before.
The beard of which is coming on a treat these days, isn't it?
Oh, God. I think after this conversation, I'm going to need Gok Wan to bring back my self-esteem.
I can't believe this is really awful, all this content we're producing here.
It's end of series. It's real kind of bottom of the barrel end of series
last
stuff.
Days of Rome.
Yeah.
It's last days of Rome.
Nasty. Nasty business.
No, but I was going to say about that Gok Wan thing. That's the kind of thing where that lady would, you know, on the day, very moving, tears. Yeah. Maybe did reignite some stuff with her and her husband. Confidence would have gone up at work the next day, the next couple of days, the next week.
Yeah.
And then I think, I don't know if it would, probably like 3 years past, probably to the day, and you go, what the fuck was I thinking? And just scream, and then just screaming for the rest of your life.
I was naked on a London bus. The poor Paraguayans. What have I done?
I spent over in a modest way, a bit like Ben Partridge on that calendar, but still.
There was another program that there was an era of programs. It was about 20 years ago, I think. They were done in the name of, like, kind of empowerment. But when you look back at them, they were awful. So there was one that was horrific called something like How Old Do You Think I Am? Right. Where somebody who, again, felt...
Is it just looking at people's ball bags?
And carbon dating it. No. Again, it would always be a woman, low on confidence. And the idea was that they try to turn the clock back on her age. And what was particularly awful about it was that they would often make it very clear that they thought that this person looked 15 years older than she was, and then offer her like quite sort of invasive cosmetic surgery to do so.
And I imagine 3 years later, all that surgery starts popping and sort of falling off, and it sort of bits of you start expanding and randomly.
It fails its MOT.
Yeah, it fails its MOT.
You've got to get the aircon regassed. Yeah.
Which means you're no longer roadworthy. You can't actually leave your carport if you're lucky enough to have one.
You're not, if you haven't got your face disc up to date, you're no longer actually allowed to leave the house, are you? If you can't show an up to date face disc.
Well, you get clamped, wouldn't you? You get clamped and crushed.
You get clamped.
This is the second week in a row that Mike has mentioned the idea of a carport.
Mm.
What is a carport? Is that an electric car thing?
But I'd never heard of it. So he said it last week and I had to look it up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, what is a carport?
And I think Mike's jonesing for a carport.
I think it's because I've had to use them a couple of times in the last few months.
Is it?
People have. It just means a car parking space that's part of your house. But some people now, such as the world, nature of the world we live in, lots of people now rent them out.
It's time for Provincial Dad Chat.
Who's hidden my bloody walking boots?
I'm not saying it's ruined the holiday. I'm just saying I asked for rum raisin.
Get your skates on, kids, otherwise we'll miss the inflatable session.
She's taking her mother to see Blood Brothers, which means
More Top Gear time for me.
Why would I need to go and see a podiatrist?
Of course I've kept the warranty information, darling.
So, Mike, can you say again what a carport is? Sorry.
I mean, it's just, I think in olden days it would have just been called a drive, but a drive is quite a grand term, isn't it? I think people don't like the word drive in the post. What's the name of that posh show with the stately home?
Keeping Up Appearances.
Okay.
Well,
Downton? I'm in Downton Abbey. Yeah.
Okay, right. Yeah.
But yeah, so it's just like a little one of those, just a space for a car outside your house.
Carport?
Yeah, which most people don't have.
There's got to be a middle ground between drive and a carport is so ugly.
Oh, it's a horrible term.
It's so USB stick.
But it's the term that's used on the, like, if you got to drive, if you got a gig in Bath or something and you don't know where you're going to park, and, ooh, maybe I'll get a little carport.
Ooh. What do you mean get a carport?
Well, as in you could, like, people bring people it with hire you. Them. You know, like, well, ideally, I mean, that would be the dream, wouldn't it? But people rent out the space like an Airbnb, like they rent out their spare room, they'll rent their car parking space.
But I think a carport needs a roof, right, Mike, for it to be a carport.
Ooh.
When I looked it up last week.
Really?
Okay.
Is that not what I would call a car parking place?
Well, that's very vague, isn't it?
Parking space.
A parking space. A parking space.
Very vague.
Is that what it is?
I don't think so, no. Well, yes, it is, but it's a subset, isn't it?
Because a carport.
Car harbour?
It's from where your car embarks onto the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah.
So does a carport have a lot of the stuff that goes with ports? So a kind of port scene? Will there be people?
Yeah, there are bordellos. There's a lot of shanties going about.
People trying to sell you things.
Dockside bar. Yeah. A lot of fresh prawns.
Crabbing.
Small local museum dedicated to knots. All that stuff.
A gibbet.
Several gibbets.
I went to a wedding once where I talked to someone about the fact that they'd come in from out of town. It was a London wedding.
Yeah.
London weddings are one of the only times that Londoners meet out of towners because people all come from out of town to a London wedding. And this person had used an app. I think this is what you're talking about, is it? They'd used an app to find a car parking space.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a suburb of London.
And it was boring when I described it. And now we're going through it again.
Oh, yeah. But can you imagine how boring?
Was that their chat? Was that their wedding bants?
That was their wedding chat, right?
Because you were talking about the works of Marc Chagall, weren't you? That was your...
I was talking about the works of Marc Chagall. And I was talking about how has Chagall been influenced by Chopin? What's a Chopin Chagall? Is there a Chopin Chagall?
Even Chagall related to Marc Chagall.
Is there a Chagall Chagall Chopin? Steven Chagall? Venn diagram. That sort of thing is what I was up for chatting about. And this out-of-towner barged in with his parking convenience related story. But what I did was, at the time, this is what I do in these situations, I hit it with a level of interest that was massively over the top, because that's what I do. I'm a people pleaser in certain ways. So what I did was...
You're a people pleaser.
I don't know, is that right?
Because we are both people, me and Mike, and...
Are you there?
I think if you think you're a people pleaser, you need to at least examine the wake of people you leave behind you and see if they are pleased.
I'm too busy moving on pleasing the next people. I've moved on. I'm really pleasing to new people.
Was Sophie Ellis Bextor pleased?
No, but the recipient of those plums...
Self-pleasing. So you're self-pleasing.
Sometimes, well, am I not a person? Sorry. I was brought up in a certain way. I think it's from my parents. If someone's a bit boring at a party, you just pretend to be massively interested in what they're saying.
There's no other option. What's the other option? It's going, boring! Sorry, mate, this is really boring.
Are you right? I'm just saying I'm a socially functional human being.
You're not a psychopath.
To a fairly minimal level.
Although, as we discussed maybe now years ago, you could have said, Fanjambo.
Fanjambo.
And then just slowly walk backwards.
Yeah. But basically, there's a certain technique. When you're in a socially awkward situation, there's a certain technique that I use, which is I sort of overcompensate, so push it hard. So a good example is...
I'm going to be looking out for this, Henry, when we speak next.
That's a great point, Ben. Nice one. No, but this happened to me. I was given a terrible present. Obviously, when you're being given a gift, it's a very good example of where this sort of social signalling comes to play. So I was once given by an uncle of mine, I was a teenager, I was given a sort of beige fishing waistcoat.
Right.
So it was by any metric, it was an absolutely terrible present. It was terrible.
Fishing waistcoat?
Yeah, it was a sort of, I don't know, a sort of gilet waistcoat, the zip, beige.
I'm seeing lots of pockets. Is it lots of pockets?
With millions and millions of pockets on it.
Spaces to slide bits of worm on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mike, it's for if you're fishing in the morning and then afternoon snooker. You can do both.
Yeah.
So it's chalk and maggots, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's basically a perfect for a Midlands holiday, isn't it?
On the Chalk and Maggots Express.
I'm just thinking, what's the holiday? Because you know those holidays where they go, you're skiing in the morning and you're snorkeling in the night. Yeah. You're fishing in the morning, you're playing snooker in the afternoon. Come to Sheffield. Can you fish in Sheffield?
Probably. You can fish most places.
So what I did was, on that day, an important moment happened in my life there. This uncle had travelled, had come quite a long way to see us. It was quite a big deal as a present. I opened it up, I looked at it. There was a moment where I thought, this is a choice in life here. What do I do here? This present is so bad that if I just sort of go, oh, thanks very much, or my disappointment is going to be very, very hard to disguise here. Now, obviously, this is a shit present. Mm-hmm. You can just say that. That's like saying to someone you're boring at a wedding. You can't do that.
It's a bit on the nose, isn't it?
It's a bit on the nose. So what I did was, I went, I've got to hit this hard. And basically I went, this is unbelievable. This is the best thing I've ever, I love it. This is the best present I've ever had. I love, looking at all the pockets. Look at it. I can put worms in it.
In the epaulettes.
This is brilliant. And I was just skipping around and just, yes, like, I love this. Thank you so much. And hugging everyone, high-fiving people and stuff. Because
and now every year for 30 years.
He sent me a more complicated. I go on holiday with that uncle every year to Sheffield. So the point I wanted to make about that wedding was, basically, I pretended, and this happens to me, because basically, in the moments, like when I received that gift of the fishing waistcoat, or when I was talking to this guy at a wedding about parking, I play my part so well. Like a great actor, I become the part. I feel it. I mean, I genuinely feel the emotion of loving the fishing waistcoat, being deeply fascinated by the idea of an app that can access parking spaces around the country that people have put out to rent. But I play the part so well that then, looking back, I can't actually remember whether or not I was interested. Because I've got an emotion. Because when Mike started talking about carporting, I had this emotion of like, oh, yes, I had that amazing conversation, didn't I? Oh, yes. But actually, I can't remember actually if I was pretending so well that I felt the feeling. And actually, what is truth? If you feel something, is it real? And again, these are all things I would have been discussing at that wedding in relation to the works of Chagall, had I not been interrupted by a...
boring old bastard.
Your words. My thumbs up.
Can we role play this, Mike? Can you play the role of provincial man, excited that he's managed to use a new app park his car somewhere in North Finchley?
Mm.
Yeah.
And Henry, can you show us how you reacted?
Hi there.
I'm Henry. Friend of the.
I'm Mike. Used to go to uni with Dave, but don't live here anymore. No, we've come down from Gloucester.
Oh wow! Yeah, I've heard Gloucester's really nice.
Yeah, well, we drove actually because the trains are a nightmare. So, but luckily, managed to park the car just short tube right away actually because I got that fresh port. Do you use Freshport?
No, tell me, what is Freshport? That sounds interesting.
And it's just someone who owns a carport in North Finchley, and it's pretty cheap as chips, actually. It's only cost a tenner for 24 hours. And
well, I'll tell you what, chips aren't... wish chips were cheap. You should try some of the local gastro pubs and bistros and so on that I go to on a regular basis.
But yeah, it's really good. It's really simple. You just log in and...
So you literally just use an app to find someone else's...
Yeah, you just put the postcode in or any of the wedding and it finds the nearest one. And so
the whole thing finds it on an app? That is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I can even cue it into my sat nav, so I just plug it straight in.
So you don't even have to, because obviously with the congestion charge, you're avoiding all that. That is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, we're outside of that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and I got one of the new Bilingos as well, so we're okay with the emissions. Didn't get charged for that either. So.
A sea mammal?
I beg your pardon?
A Bilingo whale?
The new Bilingo.
What is a Bilingo?
Well, it's a sort of cross between a city car and a people carrier, really.
That sounds incredible.
Hi, guys. Sorry. Hi. I'm from the venue I work here. Just to let you know, please don't approach the chocolate fountain. It is malfunctioning, and it's firing out profiteroles, and they're like on fire. They're that hot. And I don't know. Somebody's shoved a whole load of profiteroles in the bottom of the chocolate fountain, so I'm just going around to let everyone know to not approach it. Sorry about that.
But I have, the only reason I could persuade my wife to come was because I did say there was a chocolate fountain, so I would like to still see the chocolate fountain.
I'm Sean Bean. Sean Bean.
You're the Australian Sean Bean?
I'm Sean Bean. I get a lot of attention at these things, so I'm playing the part of an Australian. At this wedding, so people won't know that I'm Sean Bean, but I am Sean Bean.
I keep tripping up when I introduce myself with my name, but
I've blown it. I'm not supposed to say I'm Sean Bean.
I'm trying to. It's harder to go incognito than you think when you're Sean Bean.
I'm supposed to say I'm. So my name is Terence Biosystem, or Terry Biosystem. You can call me. That's the name I'm supposed to pass. But that's it. I've got a problem, which is I think I'm Sean Bean occasionally, sometimes for a bit. All right? Now I've heard what's happened is, because this is the old plumbing at these venues, you can't get the pads.
Because it's the old Victorian chocolate plumbing system. They've not upgraded it.
You can't get the pads. What I've heard has happened, right, apparently, is they've wired up the... it's the worst-case scenario. The chocolate fountain is actually wired up to the toilets, which means...
Those aren't profiteroles.
Dream on. Dream on. They're not profiteroles. On the plus side, the toilets are absolutely fracking rammed with profiteroles, so get in there. Get yourself a spoon. Get down there. It does feel wrong initially on your knees, but honestly... You get used to it. You do.
Sounds like quite a good wedding, to be honest.
It actually was. You know what? It's actually a decent wedding.
Let's turn on that bean machine. This week's topic, as sent in by Isabella from Bremen,
thank you, Isabella,
is surfing. Oh, well, oh, well, oh, well. It's gone a bit Russian monk at the end there.
Russian monks can surf too.
Oh, it's a shark! I'm actually Sean Bean dressed as a shark! doesn't mean I won't eat your leg, you fucker!
Are you either of you Beach Boys fans?
Love the Beach Boys.
I do like the Beach Boys.
Yeah, brilliant.
So my friend Gareth, who we all know actually, he was the original...
Man called Gareth, yep.
The original Bean Machine, in a way. He has recently had a big Beach Boys phase where he's like, I've always liked the Beach Boys, but I'm going to listen to their complete works.
Very Gareth.
Is he like that generally, Gareth? Is he a proper completist?
Yeah, he'll have like a little project where he'll be like, right,
okay,
tell you what, I'm going to, like he, before we left the Europe after the Brexit referendum, he ticked off every European country.
He ticked them off.
When I say ticked off, I meant he visited. He didn't irritate them off.
He did. He ticked off every European city. Is every European town that has a cathedral?
He went to every European country within the EU between 2016 when we voted to leave, yeah. and I think 2020 when we finally
That's
did
superb.
Leave.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's a man who likes a project.
And he's a man who likes to have deep knowledge of something, isn't he?
So he decided he was going to listen to all the Beach Boys' output.
Yeah.
And he was telling me, I think it might be their last album where they're all in it, I think. It's from the early 90s. It's known, I think, as being a really, really bad album.
Okay, yeah.
And the reason is, because you know in the Beach Boys, there's two songwriters, aren't there? There's Brian
Wilson.
Yeah, who's amazing. So I think the deal is that Brian Wilson's this kind of creative genius. Mm-hmm. And then Mike Love is a guy who just likes writing songs about surfing.
Okay.
Right.
And he has a platform to do so.
Yeah. So in the early 90s, when they're all like getting on a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He writes an album that's all about hitting the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it sort of doesn't really make sense anymore because they're all basically old men. But it's still like, we're going to hit the waves tonight. And it's
there's
just
a pretty lady sitting on some sand.
Waves after wave of stomach acid. Making it hard for me to enjoy this roast. That sort of thing. Help me, Rhonda. Help me, Rhonda. Do a shit. Help me, Rhonda. Help me, Rhonda. Open my bowel. Help me, Rhonda. Help me, Rhonda. With the creams. With the Rhonda. With your various creams. Look, by the way, there's a whole genre of doing this kind of joke, and I don't think it's that clever or funny, to be honest. So.
But the next song you'll lampoon.
It's Help Me Wander Again. Help me round. Help me round to go up the stairs. Help me round. Help me round. Oh, God. Yeah. Okay, carry on.
So I'm just looking at the Wikipedia for it. It's called Summer in Paradise.
Mm-hmm. Right,
it's the only Beach Boys album not to feature any contributions from Brian Wilson.
Oh, interesting.
And has been regarded as the band's critical and commercial low point.
Oh, no. Oh, poor Mike Love, though.
Oh, yeah. Mike Love, it wasn't.
What is Mike Love's role in the band if he's not writing songs?
But also, Mike Love, he never needed to do the control experiment to work out whether or not, you know, the level to which his influence was making the songs good. And now he's done the control experiment.
And now he knows for a fact. I feel really sorry for Mike Love.
Oh,
what is it? What is it? Love. What was his role? Was he like?
Can I just say, Mike's union going on here, anyone?
Yeah, but he's standing up for Mike Love.
Yeah. It's bloody Mike's union, isn't it?
Well, sometimes a Mike puts his head above the parapet and he regrets it.
I think to begin with, he was the main one in the Beach Boys, right? I think he was
Mike
the
Love.
Main singer.
Oh, really?
Or maybe lyricist? I'm not sure. But they all sang, right?
So he's got a set of pipes.
Yeah. I think he can go, along with the rest of them.
Ooh, I'm struggling to put on my shoe. Rhonda, help me, Rhonda, with my special shoes. Help me, Rhonda, help me, Rhonda. The ultra-padded shoes, help me. Sorry. Oh, God, I don't approve of that kind of joke. It's basically bad.
Help me, Rhonda, understand TikTok. Help me, Rhonda.
Understand social media. Help me, Rhonda. Help me, Rhonda. I got some lovely photos of my grandchildren. Help me, Rhonda. Help me, Rhonda. I can't get them onto my laptop. Help me, Rhonda. Help me. I missed it old days when you got them done at Boots. Help me, Rhonda. Help me.
Let me read out the track listing for you of this album, Summer in Paradise.
Okay. Also, Summer in Paradise, any off-the-shelf AI, if you asked to come up with a name for a Beach Boys album.
Yeah. Track one. Hot fun in the summertime.
Yeah.
I'm wearing too many layers. Help me, Rhonda. Help me, help me. I'm too hot in the summertime. Help me, Rhonda. Help me.
You were wrong about that cardigan, Rhonda.
Help me, Rhonda. Oh, God.
Okay. Track two.
Yeah.
Surfing.
Come on. is it surfing? At least tell me they've left out the G at least.
There's no G. It's just surfing.
Yeah.
That's because he couldn't find the G. Help me, Rhonda. Help me. I can't find the G. Okay. Sorry. That's enough of that, by the way. Stop.
Track three. Yep. Summer of Love.
Bloody
track four.
ChatGPT all the way.
Island Fever. Track five. Still Surfing.
Oh my God.
Still hot and it's still summertime, fun, feverish, and it's still on the island.
That would be like a Beatles album that was like, I still want to hold your hand. I'm still holding your hand. Track three. My hand's getting hot, but I'm going to keep holding on, baby. Trap five, I think our hands have actually become welded. Trap six, you can't put a restraining order on someone's hand.
Track six, Slow Summer Dancing, brackets, One Summer Night.
They've left the G off the dancing?
They have, yeah.
Yeah, and out of night as well.
It's in night.
Knicht.
Knicht.
Track 7, Strange Things Happen. So that's the first non-summer or non-surf-based title. There's 7 tracks in.
That feels like that's the beginning of the journey within the concept album. Yes. Like track 9 might be Funeral Insurance.
Track 8. Remember, brackets, Walking in the Sand. We're back to the beach. Great. Yeah.
That's a cover, isn't it? That's a famous song.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's by someone called George Morton.
Shangri-La's.
Oh, okay, great.
I think. Maybe.
Track 9, Lahaina Aloha.
Oh, okay, because you've got to put some sort of cod Spanish in there somewhere.
Well, it's cod Hawaiian, I imagine.
Cod Hawaiian, yeah.
Track 10, Under the Boardwalk, which I guess might be a...
Yeah, that'll be a cover.
Cover.
Still, I mean, they've totally stopped trying at this point, yeah.
Track 11, Summer in Paradise. Track 12, Forever. So there you go.
God, that is leaning really hard into one sort of element of it, isn't it? If you're that into surfing, then like, how have you got this much time to spend in the recording studio, writing songs, going on tour? Why don't you go surfing then?
I don't think the Beach Boys did surf.
Ben, I choose to disagree, and I choose to state that I believe they recorded all of their albums while surfing. That's how they managed to bottle that magic.
Is that where they're going?
That's the sound you make when you're surfing. And it was an absolute health and safety nightmare in terms of the recording equipment. Yes.
I think, I'm just looking at one of them surfed. Dennis Wilson surfed.
Okay.
The others did not surf.
I've read a thing, I'm reading a thing here. Dennis was the only one who could really surf. We all tried, even Brian, but we were terrible. We just wanted to have a good time and play music about surfing for some reason. But I suppose it's got to be about something, isn't it? It can't just be about playing music. Although actually, an album that is about recording an album, to me, would actually be really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, that is interesting.
Track 1 could be called Track 1. Think of it interesting, yeah.
Yeah, do you know what? Actually, to park here for the wedding, we actually drove over from Nottingham. Do you know, we used an app.
Really? That sounds incredible.
Because we're going to do an NCP car park.
Right.
But it's like £25 for...
Oh, that's really interesting. That's much more interesting than actually, you know, challenging the very essence of what a whole art form is about. Yeah. Tell me more about the parking. So I'm just going to shout something into this profiterole. Broke your fuck! So, yeah, I am.
That wasn't a profiterole, Henry.
No! Should I get out? I was thinking, should I get out ChatGPT and ask it to name 10 new Beach Boys songs?
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite a good idea. Load her up. I'm looking at Mike Love's Wikipedia page, and there's a bit called Political Views.
Yeah.
And Love describes himself as a progressive, notwithstanding the friendly relationship between the Beach Boys and George H.W. Bush for many years.
Hmm.
They don't seem like an obvious fit, do they?
Well, I don't know. Because how... Their music, it's all quite conservative with a small C, I reckon, because it's very preppy, isn't it? You get your girl and you go down the beach and you go to the beach and you go to your girl and you get a nice...
Preppy sort of summer break stuff.
And you go on a summer break and... It's not exactly radical, is it?
Go down the milk bar.
You go down the milk bar, you go down the laundromat, you stick your ice cream in the... Stick it on a hot cycle.
In the back of a Chevy.
Back of a Chevy.
And you're home in time for the 5th of July.
Exactly. Watch the moon landings.
America.
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 I'd like 2 tickets for the Chattanooga Choo Choo.
America. America.
Get me the DA.
A slice of old mama's apple pie down the Alamo in New York City.
No one's ever going to listen to this crazy new music you're making, Mr. Presley.
Burgers. Please come up with 10 new names for Beach Boys songs. And let's see what's better, Mike Love or ChatGPT. Oh, I'm sorry, Mike Love. These are much better, I can tell already.
Okay, let's have some. Track 1.
I'm interested in this album. Track 1, Sunset Serenade. Yes.
Yes.
I like it. Because it's almost like you picture the beach. You don't need to be on the nose with it. It's a Beach Boys album. Everything's the same. You've got all the Beach Boys on the front, except instead of Mike Love, there's a horrible robot with Mike Love's haircut stuck to it. stuck on. Track two, Wave Whispers.
Oh, that's nice.
It's quite nice, isn't it?
Wave Whispers.
Whispers, whispers. Wave Whispers.
Track three, Sandcastle Dreams. Okay. That's good.
That's good.
Can I just say something? Mm-hmm. Probably a bit poignant, isn't it? Because sandcastles quite often get washed away. So it's poignant. It's moving already.
Yeah, I'm imagining that it's about the lost innocence of childhood.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And the sandcastle dreams that get washed away in the surf. Yeah.
The futility of vaulting ambition.
Yes, that's beautiful. Perhaps. Yeah. Track four, Tidal Harmony. Quite nice.
Possible title for Ben and my side project podcast.
Oh, yeah. Tidal Harmony. It's quite nice. It's quite kind of the tides come in, the tides go out. There's time passing, but also there's a beauty in that. There's a harmony between the in and the out, the ebbing and flowing in life.
Are you saying it's more complex than the song Surfing?
I think it might. Let's do it. I think let's do a track by track comparison. In fact,
okay.
So track one is Sunset Serenade. What is it on that?
I think it was Hot Fun Summertime, wasn't it?
Hot Fun in the Summertime.
Just sounds really mindless, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like there's no nuance in that. Number two, Wave Whispers.
Surfing.
Number three, Sandcastle Dreams. Just thinking about that, I could well up. I could actually cry real tears if I just looked at those two words for long enough. What have we got? Track three on
Summer of Love.
Pretty lame. Track four, Tidal Harmony.
Track four, Island Fever.
I think Tidal Harmony is better.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Track five, Breezy Bliss.
Ooh,
That's not so good.
It's not the best.
That sounds like a really sort of dodgy sort of B&B that you might come across in the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, or the name of like a lip balm that they sell in Claire's Accessories.
Yeah.
Come on, ChatGPT.
Come on, ChatGPT. You can do better. Number six, Surfside Symphony.
Oh. Okay. Is that a cover of Bittersweet Symphony, but in a surf style?
It might be. Number seven, Seaside Reverie.
Dreadful.
No, that's bad.
Dreadful stuff.
Yeah, we don't like that.
No.
What's number seven on the Mike Love album?
Strange Things Happen.
That's better. It's on the nose, but it's better.
Number eight, Coral Carnival.
No.
You know what that sounds like?
A Pixar movie.
Coral Carnival. Yeah, no, what it is when you're watching a Pixar film on DVD and you're fast-forwarding through scenes and scenes have names, which never happens in the real film. Right. But have you ever had that experience? You're fast-forwarding through
a film.
You're
suddenly aware of the chapter name.
Suddenly you're in, apparently this bit's Coral Carnival.
What bit of a Pixar film are you fast-forwarding to?
What do you mean?
I normally just watch the whole film. That's
Henry's... You're trying to find the blue bits, Henry.
What are you looking for?
The battle scene.
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Do you just watch the end of Finding Nemo again and again and again?
Just a bit where they find Nemo mainly, yeah.
We can't bear the journey.
Yeah. Please go straight to finding him, please. I can't deal with it. I know the seagulls are quite friendly characters, but still, it's the fact they haven't found Nemo yet. I can't deal with it. As far as I'm concerned, it's a 20-minute film called We Found Nemo.
Here he is.
Here's Nemo.
Number nine. Aquatic Melodies.
Oh, aquatic is a word that very rarely comes up in titles of anything, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a very functional word. It's not very lyrical.
They're getting worse because it's getting more thesaurus-y inhuman somehow, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it really started well. And the last one, Coastal Carousel.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of thesaurus all the way now, isn't it? Come on.
They're thesaurusing it. I dread to think, in fact...
Yeah, can you ask it for 20 more and see where it ends up?
Please come up with... 200 new names for Beach Boys songs. I'm not suggesting we read all of them. Let's go straight to the end.
Okay.
Oh, my lordies.
Is it just sort of wet humming?
Well, it's already lost it at number 11, which is Mango Tango Shore. Come on down to the Mango Tango Shore. They've got mangoes. They've got tangos, and it's on the coast.
The Mango Tangos are free on the Mango Tango Shore.
Mango Tango Shore.
Mango Tango with me. Your daddy says, don't mango with the men. Come and go to the Mango Tango with me. Because your mama says, come and do a tango on the mango with me.
It's actually not bad. Yeah, it's getting really Reef Rhapsody. We've got Ocean Odyssey Overture.
No.
Yeah. That's only number 77. Barefoot Blues, I don't mind. That's number 74. Seashell Shuffle.
Pond Dirge.
Right down to, number 150. Saltwater Serenity.
That's pushing it.
It's really inhuman, that.
I've asked ChatGPT, can you come up with the name of a song that the comedian Mike Wozniak could sing with the Beach Boys? Mm. It says, how about a song called Surfing the Stand-Up Wave?
Oh, my God.
Comedian Mike Wozniak collaborates with the Beach Boys.
Mike, you've got to put that out. Is there time for Mike to put that out at Christmas? Surfing the Stand-Up Wave. Dolphin Dreams. Salty Samba.
I like it.
Driftwood Dance.
Salty Samba. I don't mind. Salty Samba sounds like a sort of, like it might have been Patrick Swayze's first movie that he doesn't like talking about anymore. You know?
The weird thing about surfing is, right, it's for some reason, it's cool, right? It's a cool thing to do, and it's always been cool. So when the Beach Boys were singing about it, it was cool. It's still kind of cool, right? But there's now a new thing, which is a bit like surfing, but they've taken all the cool out of it. And now, for some reason, people go paddleboarding.
Don't think that's cool. Does anyone think paddleboarding is cool?
What is paddleboarding?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like they've taken all the coolness out of surfing and replaced it with this thing that I don't know what they're doing.
I don't know what they're doing.
It's quite big in our neck of the woods, paddleboarding. There's a lot of people around this neck of the woods who own a paddleboard, whether it's an inflatable one or a solid one.
Are you standing on the board with a big oar?
Basically, what happens, I've never really understood the appeal. I think some people think it's good for their guns. I think some people think it's just a very relaxing way to bob about on the sea. It definitely keeps the Coast Guard out of trouble, you know. It's quite an easy way to get washed out towards France. I mean, that...
So it keeps them busy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, keeps them busy. It's the rescue.
Oh, my
people.
God, yeah. I mean, any time there's a sunny day down around this neck of the woods, someone's... You know that by 11:20 a.m., someone's going to be halfway to Guernsey on a paddleboard.
That sounds like a good Beach Boys song, halfway to Guernsey on a paddleboard.
On a paddleboard. Ooh.
I'm looking at photos of people paddleboarding.
Yeah.
And I don't want to malign anyone that does this as a hobby, but the word that comes to mind is pathetic. It looks pathetic. In fact, it doesn't just look pathetic. It looks like a symbol of the futility of life. Like a man slightly hunched over with a stick standing on a bit of a board, and it's so sort of pointless looking.
No, I'm mystified by it. A group of small kids can have quite a lot of fun on a paddleboard, just pushing each other over and all that kind of stuff. That makes entire sense to me. But when you see a middle-aged man, you know, who for the day has been persuaded to put away his lycra and his clickety-clackety cycling shoes and his bicycle,
right?
It's the same guy. He's out on the sea, and it's quite hard work. It's quite pleasureless.
It looks pleasureless and very lonely.
I mean, if there's any sort of tide, any movement of the water at all, it's incredibly hard work to get anywhere.
And in return for that hard work, all you get is the quotidian thrill of standing up.
You stand up. And then you have to...
You're standing
up. You have to put it away again. You have to drag it in and put it on the top of your car and put it...
You may as well just stand still on the pavement for a while.
There are people, though, in this neck of the woods who seem to enjoy... Like if the weather is nice, getting the kit, they have a garage and they have kit and they want to get the kit and they want to put the kit on the car in a special way with special straps. So everyone knows that they've got the kit and then they drive the kit down, they assemble the kit and they inflate the kit and they put the kit out and then they get the kit wet and the kit injures somebody and a child cries because they don't want to get involved. Even though, do you realize how much money I've spent on this kit? And they won't do the kit. So the dad goes out with the kit and then comes out and he's got to hose the kit, the sand off the kit. I think half of it's quite a good way of not actually spending a lot of time with your family while technically pretending you're spending time with your family.
It's true. Let's all get together. We'll all get in the car. We'll all go down the seaside and I'll go away on my piece of wood.
I'll go away on a piece of wood. I'll have spent 4 hours getting the piece of wood ready before... Yes, you just don't bother me in the garage when I'm going to get ready. And then afterwards, you don't have to leave me alone in the garage because I do need to hose it down and we'll need to dry it off and then wax it afterwards. Leave me alone in the garage while I'm doing it, please.
And then when the Coast Guard pick you up, you go, no, I was trying to float to Guernsey. You ruined it. Don't take me back to the shore, please.
Yeah, the Coast Guard is just returning wave upon wave of middle-aged men to their families.
Trying to escape.
Okay. Listen, Mr. Coast Guard. This wet piece of haddock says you never saw no middle-aged man head into Guernsey. What do you say? Not interested? But what do you say, this fistful of herrings? Also, say that it was just a piece of driftwood, which emotionally, in a way, would be right. That was floating to Guernsey. There weren't no middle-aged man on that driftwood, no. Maybe these prawns are just from M&S. I didn't catch them.
But they're pre-cooked, so...
Maybe these prawns...
I'd rather you didn't take these prawns, because I do actually like these prawns, and they're quite expensive prawns.
I'm hoping I can get them to reproduce, and, I'm going to have to make a living on Guernsey somehow.
Trying to get these cooked prawns to reproduce.
I'm hoping that Guernsey is crying out for some sort of prawn-based sex review late night. Fandango, but I don't really know what the scene is there. I've never made it this far before. I'm so close. I try every weekend to get to Guernsey, and you guys always bring me back.
It's a form of prawn puppetry. You see, if I put each prawn on the end of a chopstick, I can make the prawns move up and down. I can make it look like they're making love for the dads.
It's actually very tasteful.
But earlier in the day, there'll be a kids' show where the prawns are simply arguing.
A simple Punch and Judy show where the prawns are beating each other with sticks.
Oh, that's funny. I thought I had a mackerel in my left hand, but it seems to have disappeared and made its way into your pocket. I wonder how that happened.
Officer.
Not for me to ask. Officer, I'm just a piece of driftwood without no middle-aged man on it.
Please get that winch off me. Stop winching me. Stop winching me.
Stop winching me.
It doesn't have to be Guernsey. I could live on Sark. Alderney, please.
Let's read your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
Okay, the first lot of emails are to do with, and I feel like it's good to round off, this is the last of the series. We've had a lot of fun this series with geographical records. Mm-hmm. People reaching for the stars, reaching for the skies. And listening to the podcast at ever higher altitudes. And I think we've got our winner.
Ooh.
Okay. This is exciting.
So this is from Lucian. My oxygen-deprived brain cells are trying to compose this email for my recovery bed in Tanzania.
Mm-hmm. Promising.
I can confirm that at the point of summiting the highest freestanding mountain in the world, the behemoth Kilimanjaro at 5,895 metres.
Wow.
I had some lukewarm Higgs boson bean banter peppering my eardrums.
Wow.
Oh, that's amazing.
Whilst a combination of sub-zero temperatures, severe exhaustion, and a highly explosive bowel predicament means I have absolutely no idea what was said.
Blimey.
That's amazing.
So that's interesting. What does that mean, freestanding? It's the tallest freestanding.
Well, it's kind of just on its own, isn't it? If you look at it, it's just flat all around it, and then it's like a drawing of a mountain, basically.
It just comes out of the...
Yeah. Okay. So you kind of start at... almost sea level, I think, and then you just, that's why it's so tall.
So he's just summited Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
Blimey.
I think we do need to check, though, whether that is actually higher than, somebody went to somewhere in the Himalayas, didn't they?
Yes, I think, was it Everest Base Camp or something like that?
Yes, it was. Let me check. So he's at 5,895.
What is that? Feet? Meters?
Meters.
Meters. Crumbs.
Yeah, and Everest Base Camp is only 5,000, I say only 5,364 metres.
And that's straight up, again, that's straight up. What you do is imagine a crow.
As the crow is fired.
As the crow is fired out of the blowhole of a whale. So straight up, yeah.
So he's pipped him, but it's a good half kilometre, it's crumbs, difference there.
I forwarded you both an email. With a picture of Lucian at the top of Kilimanjaro.
So he was listening to it on top.
Well, in the photo, he proves it. He's showing the screen.
Oh, wow. Oh, Lucian. That's extraordinary.
Thanks for that, Lucian. That is brilliant. I love that photo. That's so good.
Hang on. Let us temper our congratulation of Lucian.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
because I'm also going to read out this email from David. David writes, I listened at 5,895 metres.
Uh-oh.
He too ascended Kilimanjaro.
What? Oh.
And brought a stepladder and went up a bit more, and a bit higher on the same mountain.
No, he's at the same height. So he equals the record. Same height.
Okay, but do we have to get heightest, though? Do we have to work out who's
actual tallest?
Whose ears are higher up?
Yeah.
Between Lucien and David.
Also, who has a lower average ambient height throughout the year?
Yes,
that's right.
We've discussed this already.
Yeah, and are either of them a fan of a Cuban heel?
Yes.
All of this stuff.
So congratulations both to Lucien and to David.
Yeah.
But hang on.
No.
What?
Surely not.
We've had an email from Josu.
Josu!
Josu writes, Dear Beans, with the sole purpose of being mentioned in a podcast that has nothing to do with mountaineering, I left my home not far from Bremen at the end of September towards Tanzania, where I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro!
Oh, my word. They're all at it.
They're all at it.
This podcast runs the risk of eroding the peak of Mount Kilimanjaro to the point where it is no longer 5,895 metres tall from sheer footfall.
Could it be that most of our listeners are listening at the top of Kilimanjaro?
It's probably a lot better if you're slightly sort of hypoxic, isn't it? There's a little bit less oxygen swimming around your brain cells.
Can I say that photo at the top of Kilimanjaro, there's a great photo. He's given us one photo where he's listening to the episode. Another one where he's just standing next to this sign they've got at the top. And it's great because it's Mount Kilimanjaro. Congratulations. Uhuru Peak, Tanzania, 5,895 meters. And then it's got a bunch of statistics, facts. Africa's highest point. And then they just get slightly less good as it goes down. World's highest freestanding mountain. Yeah. Because that's what matters with mountains, isn't it? It's how freestanding they are. Yeah. And then it goes down to one of the world's largest volcanoes. One of them.
Are you denigrating the achievements of our listeners, Henry?
No, not at all. Loads and loads of rocks. They get really desperate towards the bottom. Probably more pebbles than you'd see on an average Sunday. Know what I mean?
Voted the 48th best view in Height magazine, July 2007.
That's brilliant.
So I think where that leaves us is the current, at the end of this series, the current record holders are all three, Lucien, David and Josu. If you can tell us how high your ears are off the ground, we can then make an official ruling.
We'd be interested, yeah.
And it also basically points to the only way somebody could beat this is Everest, I think.
I know, but listen, we can't encourage that because Everest is an absolute death trap. We cannot encourage people to start thinking about that as a...
No, it'd be horrible if there was a frozen body found on the face of Everest and clutching a phone listening to Three Bean Salad into its dead ears, you know.
Halfway, where you can see their frozen fingers in the middle of writing quite a withering review.
Yeah. We don't know if it was a one-star review or if they died after doing one of the five stars. We don't know how many stars, but it's at least one.
Crumbs. Well, maybe this trio have cracked it then.
Now we've got an email on the topic of injuries that can happen to you as a scientist.
Ah, yes. Very good.
So we spoke about the Higgs boson and particle accelerators last week. Eleanor from Melbourne emails, I'm a scientist who works at the synchrotron.
Wow.
A type of particle accelerator designed to produce light a million times brighter than the sun.
Holy moly.
Using an adapted sink.
A really well-polished sink.
I mean, what possible use could light a million times brighter than the sun be?
Good for getting rid of burglars.
I tell you what, maybe you could turn it into a torchlight that can actually find some actual policies with this new Labour manifesto. Keir Starmer, new Labour Party, actual policies, you know. It's all very well and good saying there'll be a change after 13 years of Tory rule, but have you actually got solid policies? Yeah?
I like it.
Yeah, it's all right. We got there in the end. It didn't smack of being fully thought through when you started.
Has it been 13 years of Tory rule, by the way?
Yes, it has.
Yes.
Although it was a coalition for the first 5 years.
Darling Clegg.
Darling Clegg. Whose smile shone brighter than the synchrotron.
It really did.
Hey, isn't Eleanor going to tell us about some synchrotron injuries?
In fact, his smile burnt so brightly that it actually completely... made the previous Liberal commitments around proportional representation and tuition fees in practically invisible. Is that correct?
Yes. Henry, did you hear Mike trying to curtail the banter just then?
I did, I know. And I thought this isn't happening. I'm going to carry on. I've even got more. The way they mumble in films these days, honestly, you practically need subtitles to watch a film that's actually English languaged in the first place. By the way, just going to say, I thought, wouldn't it have been better to keep Nick Clegg on as a sort of permanent partner to whoever's in government? So, you know, you win an election in order to...
partner with Clegg.
To spend time with Nick Clegg.
Or to partner with Clegg. So Clegg is the constant, if you know what I mean.
Clegg is the constitution.
Clegg is the constitution. We didn't have a written constitution, but we've got Nick Clegg.
I don't think that would be a good idea.
Nah, you're right. It's probably...
Because we'd be depriving Facebook of one of their best executives.
That's true. And the whole Cleggtopia section of the metaverse wouldn't exist.
They've shut down the metaverse. Did you know that?
Have they?
Oh, have they?
They just, yeah. They invested like $2 billion into it and then they were like, actually, this is rubbish.
Oh, really?
Got rid of it. Yeah. It was meant to be the future, yeah. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, they did that quietly. You spotted it there, didn't you, Ben?
Oh, they did, didn't they?
Yeah, well, I keep tabs on Clegg.
Were you in the metaverse at the time when it got shut down? You queuing up to buy a cantaloupe melon?
Everyone who was inside the metaverse when it was shut down died in real life. I was only spared because the beam machine kept me alive. Eleanor writes, in my day-to-day work, I encounter numerous hazards. Liquid nitrogen, powerful X-ray beams, high-speed industrial robots.
And that was before I'd finished my meeting with Liz Truss.
I'm just going to be hammering that satire jingle button.
You even allowed yourself a little glasses wiggle at the end of that one, haven't you?
It deserved it.
Ladies and gentlemen, please pray silence for a moment of satire.
Jonathan Swift.
Holding institutions to account.
Mark Twain.
Speaking truth to power.
Chaucer.
A core part of any healthy democracy.
Chumbawamba.
Can our jokes actually change government policy? Of course they can.
Quiet, please respect this important mode of humour. Electrons whizzing around at nearly the speed of light, lasers, acids and so on. However, the worst injury I've sustained in this hot pot of scientific dangers was the time I threw my back out picking up a kettle. Best wishes to you all, Eleanor from Melbourne.
That's lovely stuff.
That's really good. It's the one you'd least expect, as it turns out. It's the one you get. There she is, dodging acids and high-velocity industrial robots.
But that's what happens. It's the one, it's when you're not...
She let her guard down when she's picking up a kettle.
I mean, you say that's what happens. Lauren emails, your discussion of science injuries stirred some memories from my time studying for my degree in molecular immunology. I did not acquire any tooth or claw-based injuries, but I was injured by some fruit flies.
Oh.
The container they were in was knocked from the shelf it was on, and in my haste to catch it, I slipped and brought my arm down onto several upright scalpels.
What? That's the worst way to store a scalpel.
Yeah, that's such a good point.
Oh, no. You know what I think she did? This is just from my knowledge of science. She had one of those wooden objects with the holes in that you put test tubes in. Yeah. Her test tubes were probably in the dishwasher. She had a few scalpels to hand and she propped them up like test tubes in those little holes. The fruit flies on the fruit fly shelf above and then the rest of it, yeah, writes itself.
Because she was trying to do a little model reenactment of the Battle of Bosworth.
that'll be her problem,
isn't
it?
They're all going to be pikes. And the fruit flies were going to be tiny archers.
Yeah.
She also writes, a classic lab injury across most sciences is one's hair catching fire. I saw this happen twice, both times to men who seemingly thought that their long hair didn't need to be tied back for safety like all of the women. I can imagine that.
Superb.
I can imagine that. Little point, by the way, if you do want to recreate the Battle of Bosworth with science equipment, don't. I'd point you towards Netflix and the film starring Sean Bean, Bosworth.
Is that real?
Yes, Sean Bean plays every character.
Including Bosworth itself.
Including Bosworth itself.
Mike emails, Pirate Mike.
Pirate Mike. Okay.
Dear Beans, Shanty Bollocking Ahoy. It's Shanty Bollocking of the Week. In last week's episode, Mike referred to Wessex land shanties.
Mm-hmm.
As a member of a preeminent Wessex shanty crew, the Itchen Privateers, mm-hmm. I have to dish out a moderate bollocking here.
I mean, can we just take a moment over that name of his band?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a ribald joke, isn't it?
Oh, Itchen, as in Itchen Private.
Itchen Private Airs.
From the River Itchen.
It's good. It's good stuff.
It's very, very good stuff.
Now, what follows, Mike, is a bollocking, which I'll let you deal with, but I'm not sure it's a stand-up. He writes, land shanties aren't a thing.
Right.
You just said shanties.
I did say shanties, didn't I?
They aren't a thing, you're right. Oh, I only sing lawn shanties.
Lawn shanties. Lovely lawn shanty. Land shanties aren't a thing.
Yeah, we all know that.
I think we all know that's the thing. So the bollocking is based on the idea...
Is that the basis of the bollocking?
Yeah.
Well, read on, my friend, by all means, but it sounds like we're dealing with fruit of the poisoned tree here.
I mean, my response is that, Mike, you were attempting humour.
I was attempting it. I was trying it. Because we all know there's such a thing as a sea shanty. Yeah. I think I was getting a little bit wacky. I was getting my wacky on.
By the way, is this technically an itch and bollock?
Oh, God.
And I ain't going to scratch it.
Now, Mike, the reason... I wouldn't even read out this kind of bollocking because I feel like it's an obvious reflecto bollock, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mike was making a joke.
So, Mike, would you like to accept or reflect and then I'll explain why I read it out?
I'm going to reflect that because I think it was clear that I was having a little bit of silly fun.
Reflecto bollock. And you think that someone that's got a band called the Itchen Private Ears would know about having a bit of fun.
So you've reflected it. He says, I have recorded a bean shanty.
Ooh.
Which I will deliver when the bollocking is accepted.
Hang on, but... Oh, see?
He's holding your bollock to ransom.
I mean... On one hand, I really want to hear the bean shanty. On the other hand, should Mike take a bollocking that he doesn't deserve?
What price? Dignity? Yeah. What price? Pride? It seems too cruel, doesn't it? But what kind of chump am I if I just accept a bollocking for the sake of a bit of shanty? How much do you two want to hear the shanty?
Mike, could you accept the bollock, but with your bollocks crossed?
Do it, Mike, do it! Okay. Twist them.
Hang on. Hold on.
Full torsion.
I accept the bollocking.
Bollocking accepted.
We now need that bean shanty. He also writes, PS, everyone is welcome to come down and sing sea shanties with the crew at the Hyde Tavern in Winchester every second Friday of the month. Mentioning Pompadour to me will get you a pint. It's pretty good, isn't it?
Oh, nice. Crumbs. Okay, that sounds good.
That's a good plug.
This is a great email from Tom. G'day, Beans. I work in the emergency services, taking emergency ambulance calls equivalent to your 999. So I assume he's not in Britain then, but he doesn't say where he's from. Yeah.
He also started with the phrase, g'day.
Ah, Sherlock Wozniak strikes again.
Thank you.
Yes, I think you're probably right in thinking.
So do Australian people even write g'day in sort of emails?
Well, he has. So he works for the ambulance service. On a recent call, a patient asked not to be given a bollocking for me. For the misdeeds which led him to need the ambulance.
Interesting.
Bollocking is not a very common local expression. And I thought, could it be? I quietly spoke the word Pompadour, knowing the call was being recorded and I might have some explaining to do. He immediately brightens and replied with the same. Our bean connection helped him in his time of need and hopefully his poorly judged object insertion was a one-off. Is that real?
No.
You don't think it's real?
I don't think that's real, I'm afraid.
I want it to be real.
It's the object insertion which pushes it over into not real to me.
It does happen, Henry. It's out there.
I know,
whether you like it or not.
No.
You're in London, mate. You're never more than 6 metres away from someone inserting an object into somewhere they shouldn't
and calling an ambulance.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say, Tom, if that was real, what a nice thing to happen. What a funny thing to happen.
I buy it.
And if it wasn't real, up yours. Yeah, it's got to be. It's one or the other, isn't it?
I'm going to say thanks, Tom. I enjoyed that. Yeah, I'm going to swallow that hook, line, and sinker.
Well, the way we can find out if this is real is if the object inserter is listening, because the object inserter turns out to be a listener of this podcast, right?
Yeah.
So if you insert an object inside yourself to the extent that you needed to call an ambulance and the call handler said Pompidou to you, do get in touch.
Perhaps you can even get a freedom of information request and get the transcript or recording of that phone call.
Even better.
And let us know how it went in terms of the... Okay, final quick email. This is from Barry. This refers to when you were talking about having a Scottish breakfast, Henry.
Mm. Oh, yeah, the lawn sausage. 7 of them.
Yes. Barry writes, hi, Beans. Just a quick one. I'd never heard the phrase lawn sausages before this episode. He has spelt it lawn as in L-A-W-N.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes, and he says, and it really sounds like a euphemism for turds.
Very good.
Ferryman. Patreon.com/3beansalad.
Thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's the place to get ad-free episodes. It's the place to get our monthly bonus episode. And also, if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout-out from Mike in the Sean Bean Lounge.
You sure do.
It was a bit of a weird one, wasn't it, at the Sean Bean Lounge last night? Actually, it made it was on the BBC News website last night.
Oh,
it came up briefly.
Oh, yeah. Missed that.
That somehow 100 dogs got in. Is that right?
That's right. Thank you. And here's my report.
100 dogs got into the Sean Bean Lounge last night, and not a moment too soon, as Ben Wilson was locked in a fight to the death in the Food Waste Games complex with a super hench fox. The fox fled in terror, and Ben was suckled back to health by a heavily pregnant Rottweiler. Owen Walsh profited less by the influx and was trampled to death by not 98, not 99, but by one chihuahua. A process which took almost 14 hours, and which Jennifer Davis had the presence of mind to capture with time-lapse photography. Frank Popham, Chris Smith, and Mickey McKay reacted to the crisis with the age-old tactic of panic. All three pledged allegiance to the dogs and inserted themselves without hesitation into Sean Bean's compressed meat biscuit maker. Similarly, Karl Dragorczyk, Stephen Tailby, and Martin Frisk immediately opted for the if-you-can't-beat-them-join-them strategy, and rolled in a cowpat before eating a chair leg and wiping their asses on a freshly laid Berber carpet. Ellie Best attempted to escape the lounge disguised as a Pomeranian, but didn't realise that Tori Vaz and Thomas A had already summoned the dog catcher. Ellie was promptly captured, deloused, and adopted by a family in Shropshire. Sebastian Pennar had made the unfortunate choice to come to the lounge in his special High Days and Holidays faux fur frock coat, was mistaken for a humongo squirrel, and chased up a 7-foot rubber plant by a squad of Yorkie poos with poor impulse control. Evasion tactics varied in style and efficacy. Catelyn Hanrahan attempted to evade the mob by running in zigzags. Stephanie A. Bean punched a model rubber shark in the nose. Caitlin Bray played dead. Sally Milner surrounded herself with a ring of fire and accidentally summoned the Necromancer, who wasted a spell trying to lacerate Caitlin Bray and is now pursuing damages. Sophie masqueraded as a dead leaf. Joseph Higgins disguised himself as Ollie in disguise as a very noisy vacuum cleaner. Matt Atkinson released a toxic mucus. And Kenzie Smith couldn't remember if you should go for full eye contact or no eye contact, dithered, settled on poor eye contact, and was befriended by an emotional support dachshund. Luke John was utterly entranced by the beauty and nobility of a 3-year-old wire-haired Vizsla and was inspired to take his vows as a bean monk. Thea Ralph taught an underconfident Bichon Frise to howl and Jonathan Pilbeam how to skateboard on all fours. Sarah Jones and Mark Lane were so distracted giving tummy tickles to a 17-week-old Labrador puppy named Kiki that they failed to notice a basset hound breaking into Sean Bean's private shoe depository and pissing in his penny loafers, an offence needlessly repeated by Matthew Bishop. Precisely how the dogs got in was hard to establish. Kate Gould accused Ben Elger of replacing the lino in the front hall with cheese slices. This was found to be true, but unrelated. A rumour was spread by Jamesy IV that Cheryl Bowsfield had borrowed the Bean Lounge front door last weekend to impress a visiting aunt and had failed to replace it. Sam the chemist blamed the late Prince Philip. Shane Nichols reckoned the gates of hell had been opened and spilled forth the dogs before going on to claim that he knew a locksmith that could sort that out, but that he'd be pricey and cash only and we ought to do a whip round and he'd look after the cash. Vicky Lee of the clan Bomerley, brackets happy birthday, claimed she'd seen a queen dog down the road from the lounge and suggested it must have begun birthing drones. This being felt to be the most likely explanation, Hannah Kirk and Jesse Ross donned their dog-keeping suits, primed their smokers and set forth with the intention of subduing the queen dog before rehousing it in Derby. Thanks all.
Right, that's the episode.
And Henry, well, Henry's got to do a plug. And what that means is we keep saying, oh, Henry, don't forget to do your plug. And he says, can I do it later? Because he's not very good at plugging, is our Henry?
No, that's, well, the thing is, I've got two books coming out. I've got a kid's book and an adult book.
Well, they can handle both. They'd be interested.
Okay, I've got two books coming out that I've illustrated. One is a kid's book with Adam Kay. It's called Kay's Incredible Inventions.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. When's that out?
Soon. You can pre-order it today.
Nice.
On the internet. Yeah.
Let me plug it for you then, seeing as you're bad at it.
Okay.
You okay. And Adam Kay. Adam Kay is a former doctor who's become quite famous for writing books about being a doctor and also about the body and things for kids and learning about ourselves and all that kind of stuff.
The amazing books.
Very good. Yep. You are his illustrator, or maybe he's your writer, depending on which way.
Either way, it's good, yeah.
And you've done a few of them, and they're all really good, and kids love
Thanks
them.
Thanks very much.
Absolutely love them.
They really do. I tell you what, they're actually good for kids of all ages and sizes, except for below 7 and above 12, ideally. No, they are, though.
And what's this one about?
It's called Kay's Incredible Inventions, and it's about inventors and inventions and stuff.
So it's not necessarily medical anymore. It's branched out.
No, we've moved away from the medicinal world. It's good fun, and we shall certainly
be getting a copy in this household.
It's a brilliant book by him, and I've done my best with my humble little doodles.
Oh, shut up. Yeah. Anyway, it'll be brilliant. And what's the other one?
The adult one is Joe Wilkinson, My Autobiography.
And that's nothing to do with Adam Kay.
Which I've illustrated. It's got nothing to do with Adam Kay. It's the comedian Joe Wilkinson.
Very good.
Brilliant comedian. Also a podcaster.
Yeah, Chatterbix.
Chatterbix, which I'm going to be on soon.
Are you really?
Mm. Nice.
Yeah, next week.
Can you spend 80% of the time on that podcast plugging this podcast?
I'll try to. Yeah. So it's essentially a graphic novel almost. It's an entirely comic book autobiography.
And you've done all the illustrations
by Joe Wilkinson, illustrated by me.
Amazing.
And it's it's very sort of very silly, surreal sort of stories.
Sounds brilliant. Available early November, is it?
That might be available for pre-order now.
Tell us the title again.
It's called Joe Wilkinson, My Autobiography. And get those perfect Christmas presents.
Can I get my plug in?
You got a plug as well.
Get your plug in.
Yeah. I'm selling jams around my local area. So if you see a guy with a big wicker basket brimming full of jams.
Yeah.
Are you doing any savoury preserves or are you just keeping it sweet this time?
Some of the jams didn't work out that well, and I've relabeled them as savoury preserve.
Okay, okay.
And Mike, time for your plug?
I've invented a new type of a trouser.
Ah, yeah. It's high time someone came up with a new type of trouser.
Yeah.
So it's not a jean, it's not a chino. It's...
Ooh, Geno's?
It's Geno's, that's right.
Geno's. That's a good idea. So all the benefit of a jean... And none of the drawbacks of a genus.
Exactly. And the other way around.
Okay. That's the show. We'll finish, of course, and the end of the series.
Ooh.
What?
Unbelievable.
We'll be back in December for the Christmas-themed shows.
Yes, the Christmas season.
We always love a Christmas season.
Isn't it? We're going to do eight. We're going to do eight Christmas shows as usual.
And we'll finish, of course, with a version of our theme tune by one of you. Now, it's not actually going to be our theme tune. But we were sent this week, and I loved it so much. I want to finish the season on it. Do you mind if I slightly play with the format?
Do it.
So Mimi writes, "Hello, dear Beans. Full of hubris, I decided to translate the bluebell jingle into French."
Ooh. Oh, ho, 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 ho.
So yeah. So I think I want to. It's so I got it. It came through. It was so good that I was like, we have to finish the series on this.
I mean, it makes sense as well, doesn't it? In fact, why wasn't it in French in the first place?
That's a good point.
It feels so right, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does work. It really does work.
Mimi's crossed the T's and dotted the I's for us. Thank you, Mimi.
Yeah. And
thanks, Mimi.
See you all in December.
Cheerio. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye.